Traffic session number 23147.
Norman Dorr, Reel 1. So can you tell me where you were born?
At Waterloo, which is in Pau.
Right. And what did your father do?
He was a butcher. Uh-huh. And slaughterman later.
Yeah. Right. And how many children in the family?
Six children.
Right.
Two girls, four boys.
Right. And where did you come?
I was the last, youngest.
Oh, you're the very youngest?
Yeah, youngest of six.
Right. So quite a busy household.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Lovely family. Very nice mother, and father was a Sunday school teacher, and they grew up regularly going to church and chapel, and so a very happy childhood I had.
Right. And did your mother work at all?
No. Well, not with six children.
No, she was busy enough, yeah. And where did you go to school?
At Oakdale School, which is now gone, of course.
Mm-hmm. And that was you stayed there till you were 14?
Yes, you? Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what did you want to do when you left school?
Always wanted to be a policeman.
Did you?
Yeah, always.
Why was that?
I don't know, just something that I thought I'd like, you know.
Mm. Was there a local policeman that you'd sort of seen? Or?
I was always friendly with the local man, yes.
Yeah. So at the age of 14, what did you do then?
I worked at the co-op. The Ashley Road Co-op in the grocery department. That's where I met my wife. She worked there also.
Really?
After me, she came, of course.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So was that a job you wanted to do?
Mother was a very staunch cooperative member, and when I was only 11, she took me to see the branch manager and organised a job for me for when I left school. So she was keen for security rather than anything else, I think. So,
yes.
That's why I started in 1932. I started at the co-op at Parkstone, and I worked there for 8 years.
Fine.
Until I got called up.
You got called up. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yes, I did very much. I had a variety of jobs, you know. I worked in the dispatch department. I went out around collecting orders, which I like, because I met a lot of old ladies, which I like also. And so I did enjoy the job, you know.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
And, of course, I met my wife, so we both enjoyed it.
Yeah. And, of course, the war had started before you were called up.
Yes.
What did you feel about that?
I felt very guilty. When I saw guys coming home in uniform and I was still a civilian, I thought, blimey, I ought to get in the army and do my bit, you know.
Really?
I felt really guilty, which was a bit silly, I suppose. I was the second lot of militia called up.
Right. What did your mother feel about you being called up?
Well, she took it in her stride, I think. She was very placid sort of person.
Yeah. And then had your father been in the forces?
No, never.
No. Right, yeah. So had any of your older brothers, had they gone in?
Yes. My second from the oldest, he was a regular soldier in the Royal Corps Signals, went to India and thoroughly enjoyed himself, playing polo on horses out there and thoroughly enjoyed up in the mountains in the summer weather and down in the plains in the hot weather, and he enjoyed it. And the other one, which was second above me, he was in the Royal Artillery. He was a territorial, and then he joined the army and served a stint with the Royal Artillery on little big guns.
So you quite wanted to follow your big brother?
Oh yes, I did, yeah.
So you got your call-up papers. Where did they call you to go?
I went to Andover first of all to sign on.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's where this silly incident of name came up. I reported, like with a lot of other people, and presented my documents as you do, and the sergeant looked at me with a grin on his face and he said, "Is your name Bertha Annie Nelly?" And mother had given me my sister's birth certificate instead of mine. So I had a job to live that down, I can tell you.
So you signed on then?
Yes.
Yeah. So was this to a regiment or?
Yeah, straight into the 5th Dorset Regiment, 5th Battalion of the Dorsets.
Yeah.
I was down for the 4th, and my mate who was with me was down for the 5th. And so we talked to a sergeant there, and he arranged that I should go in the 5th with my friends. So that's where I started with the 5th and stayed with them right through the war.
Right. So, and did you stay at Andover then?
No, we went on to In Yeovil, near Yeovil. Oh dear, my memory's gone again. Froome.
Oh yeah.
That's where we did our training in Froome.
Right. So you went straight there from Andover. You didn't stay at Andover.
No, we only booked in Andover and then got by train went on up to Froome.
Right. So what was the base like at Froome?
We were living in a big old house, hillside house it was called, and we were crammed in here like sardines. I know we were sleeping on the landing for the first couple of nights, the three of us.
So was this on straw mattresses? Or
on polyasses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the first time I'd really been away from home, and I didn't like it very much. And I know it snowed the first night, and a few of us went out and had a few beers and felt a bit despondent about it all, you know.
Really? Yeah. Because it was all going to be a big change of life for
you. Oh, absolutely, yes, because I'd never been away from... I'd lived a pretty sheltered life, I suppose, really, you know. Mm.
What were the other chaps like? Were they all sort of your age?
Much about the same, yeah, all about the same age. Well, they're all militia call-ups, you know.
So what equipment did they issue you with?
Well, we simply did 3 months training without any... we had rifles to do practice and shooting and that sort of stuff, but other than that, no other equipment.
Right, so this was your 3 months basic training?
Yes, right.
Yeah. So can we just run through quickly what sort of things you did? You did rifles.
Yes, rifle shooting.
Yeah. You did drilling.
A lot of cross-country running.
Right.
Which,
so fitness was quite a bit.
Oh, fitness was one of the main aspects of it, I think, yeah. Mm.
So what was the drilling like? Did you find that easy?
I did. I entered into it very thoroughly and I enjoyed it. Quite enjoyed it. And the shooting I liked more than anything.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Were you a good shot?
I was pretty good at shooting, yeah.
So did everybody take to all this as well as you did?
Oh no, there were this friend of mine I told you about. He was in the awkward squad, we called him, and he could not march to save his life, and he had a rather harsh time of it through that. And in the end, they kicked him out. I think he went into the regimental police of all places after that, but because he couldn't march and never would march, and they disposed of him somehow, you know.
How did the NCOs treat you? What was that?
Well, I had a Sergeant Good, come down from Birmingham, and he more or less made me the prefect of the squad at the time, and much to my dislike as well. And I got so good at shooting that he got me doing practice with the blokes that weren't very good at it in my own spare time, which I didn't think very much of. And it was much to the upset of the corporal in the section as well, who should have been doing it, you know. But I got on with them very well, except that when we completed our 3 months training, he came and said, "Yeah, where's my farewell present?" And I said, "Well, farewell present? We haven't nobody given me any farewell present than I have." He said, "Well, all the other sergeants got one, but we didn't. Our squad didn't sort of think he was worth a present, I suppose."
Did you not really take to him then?
Well, he was a harsh sort of guy, you know. But I didn't dislike him.
No. Was he fair?
I think so. Yeah, yeah, strictly fair, I think. Mm. Yeah. But rather harsh, like some sergeants are.
Yeah. So, how sort of difficult was all this kit inspection and looking after your things? Was a big thing made of that?
Yes, it was. Yeah, very meticulous with that.
Mm. How did you get on with that?
Oh, quite well. Yeah. Well, I've always been sort of tidy-minded, I think. You know, it didn't come very difficult to me. Yeah.
What were the kit inspections like?
Well, it was pretty. We had to lay it all out on the floor in front of your bed, you know, and they came along and just picked it up. And if there's anybody in the squad that they did particularly dislike, they'd give them a couple of days' jankers or something was wrong, you know. But,
yeah. Did you quite enjoy the basic training?
I think I did, yes. Yeah. When I look back on it now, memory's not so good, but I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it, just so I tell myself anyway. Mm. Mm.
So at the end of 3 months, you got pretty fit, had you?
Yes, I was fit as a flea then, yeah.
Yeah, and you'd done your rifle. Had you done any other weapons?
No.
No. You'd done bayonet or grenades?
Oh, we did the normal things like throwing grenades and bayonet practice and stuff like that, yeah. Mm.
And did you do gas?
Yeah, went through a gas chamber and had to take them off at the last second and fill the gas on your skin, you know, and didn't like it very much.
No, no. Because that was, I mean, they were actually making you do something that no sensible person would do, really.
Well, no, you wouldn't.
You'd be quite obedient.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, obedience and discipline is the basic to it all, wasn't it?
So at the end of your 3 months, where did you go then?
I was transferred into the carrier section. That's a Bren Gun carrier section.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you stayed at Froome, did you?
Yeah, Froome. And
right. So tell me about a carrier section. How does that function?
10 carriers, one for the commanding officer, and 3 sections of 3, A, B, C, and D section, A, B, and C section. And it was on the carrier, there was one driver. I was a driver, and you had also a gunner, wireless operator, and a commander. Well, there wasn't a wireless operator on every one, but on each section there was a wireless operator. It was a great mate of mine,
right.
And so we went out training on the South Downs sometimes with the Bren Gun carriers. We did on occasion have flamethrowers, which was a specialist.
What, on the carrier?
On the carrier.
Really?
And,
what did you think of those?
Well, they're pretty exciting, really.
Yeah. So tell me how that worked, the flamethrower. You know, how was this done?
Well, it was built into the carrier. It was a special carrier, and they were built into it. And it was simply like firing a gun out the front of the carrier.
And what was it firing?
Some inflammable liquid that was pretty potent, you know, and set fire to a house or anything like that quite easily.
Yeah. So, and you did exercises using that flamethrower?
Yeah, we practiced with them, yeah.
How far would they go?
Well, about 40 feet, I suppose.
Right.
40, 50 feet, perhaps.
Mm. Yeah. So you were a Bren Gun driver, is that right?
Bren Gun carrier driver, right through the war.
Yeah. So where did you learn to drive?
Well, I could drive before I went in the army. Bren Gun carrier was very much like driving a car, you know.
Yeah.
Perhaps a little bit different. But,
Did you like being the driver?
Oh, I loved it, yeah.
Really?
Always have
a
look. I'd drive anything, you know.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So how does a Bren Gun carrier crew work? You know, what's the sort of system? You know, where would you get your instructions from, as it were?
Well, you've got this radio operator on each section, and the message comes through for the commander of the carrier, and you'd follow the instructions from him, you know.
Right, yeah. And so, I mean, there's several of you in the carrier, so
yeah.
How cramped was it?
Well, it was pretty cramped, yes. When the driver, we used to practice how quickly we'd get in and out, you know, and that sort of stuff.
Because what were you getting in through? Was this through?
Through the top. There's an open top.
Yeah.
I've got a model in there. I'll get it for you.
Oh, right. Yeah, tell me. That's it. So you'd have to, you sort of jump in, you know.
Yes.
As well as you could. So
yeah.
How quickly could you all get in it?
Oh, a matter of seconds.
Moving.
Really? Oh, yeah. It's this. Quite a skill. If you didn't watch yourself, you know, you'd get a good knock.
Yeah.
It was quite thick steel.
Right. So that was one of the things that you needed to be able to do, was to get in and mobilised very quickly.
Yeah,
and
very
that's
quickly.
That's something they rehearsed with.
Yes, that's one part of the practice.
Yeah. Mm. And obviously carrying a Bren Gun. Yeah. How effective were they?
Brens?
Yeah.
Marvellous machinery.
Yeah.
Beautiful gun.
Your
was.
Gunner was a good chap, was he?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I had 2 or 3 during the course of the period on
there. Yes, yeah. So when you started off, you were put into a carrier crew. So did you stay together all during your training?
Right through the training, yeah. Right through till we went abroad.
So you must have got very used to working together.
Oh, we did, absolutely, yeah.
Do you remember the other chaps on your carrier?
Oh, yes, all the time.
Yeah.
But
can you remember their names now?
My sergeant was Bob Phillips, who still lives at Bridport to start with, and he and I were doing the training for together for years and years, you know, seemed like ever. And Sandy Powell was a wireless operator, and I'd 1 or 2 gunners, but a chap named Charlie Portsmouth was one that was with me a good deal of the time. And another one was Reg Cobb, who was a local pool man. He was a gunner on my carrier as well.
Right. So you stayed at Froome doing your carrier training,
yeah.
Your sort of basic
training. Then we went and moved up to St Albans in Hertfordshire.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. When was that? Do you remember roughly?
No, I'm afraid I don't
That's
know
right.
what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what sort of a place was St Albans in those days?
Well, it's quite a town, you know, and we did training in the area, but
where were you based? Were you
in a house again? With about 8 of us, I think, in a nice house. We had quite a pleasant place there.
Yeah, an empty house was this.
Yes, yeah, we took it over.
So what were the days like in St Albans? More training on the
camp? More training in March, long route marches, 30-mile route marches. And I remember we used to feel absolutely shattered, and the band used to come out and meet us about a couple of miles before we got back to camp and strike up the old music, and your shoulders would go back and your head would go up, and it could put new life into you, you know, play the old regimental marches and that sort of thing.
Did you do any schemes?
Yeah, we went off on schemes, went up to Yorkshire on occasion.
Did you?
To stayed at Strensel Camp, I think it was, up there. But we went all over the place doing schemes.
What were the schemes like? I mean, would they last 1 or 2 days?
One or two or three days, yeah.
Right. So what would they tell you about the scheme before you went on it?
Not a great deal. I'm afraid the lowly driver didn't get told a great deal about what was happening.
Right. Yeah. So what did happen on those schemes? Can you remember any particular
ones? No, I don't remember anything particular, except it was a lot of driving, a lot of night driving and that sort of thing, you know.
And with particular objectives?
Oh, yes, yeah.
How much were you using your own initiative?
Not a great deal.
Right.
Because we had a commander in charge of the courier, you know, so he was a man who made all the decisions, and we simply did our sort of driving or shooting, whatever.
And what sort of rank would he be?
Only a sergeant.
Right.
Yeah, most of the carriers had a sergeant. Some did have a corporal, but mostly sergeants.
Yeah. So you were at St Albans for a while?
Yeah, quite a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we moved down to Whitstable in Kent.
Right. So what were you hearing of what was going on in the war, as it were? Were you following?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Every minute.
How did you do that?
Oh, by radio, it's Frank Gillard and people, you know, the reporting the what was happening over there.
So, were you feeling that you were being left out a little bit?
Not a bit, no.
So you were aware you were being trained?
Trained for a good job, yeah.
Had you any inkling as to what it would be?
Pardon?
Had you any inkling as to what your big job would be?
No, we knew pretty well we'd have to go across to the continent eventually.
Right, so to be Europe, And you were aware that's what you were being trained
for? Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. Did you wonder whether you might be sent out to the Far East or Africa?
No, I never thought that we ever would. I felt sure that we'd go to the continent for a landing over there somewhere.
So, Whitstable, different sort of a place to St Albans. Yeah. What was your base like there?
We lived over a garage, and so we had quite a lot of freedom there. And I helped the padre run his club, so I kept myself occupied.
Did you? What was the padre's name?
I think it was K-A-Y, believe. Yeah.
Was he a young chap? Or?
No, he was sort of a senior sort of chap. He got killed in France afterwards,
yeah. So what sort of club were you running?
Well, he took over a house, and we used to have sort of social evenings, and they used to. I always felt very guilty about it because it came at Christmas time, and I'd organised with his help, of course, with a lot of games and a few competitions, and I had all the answers ready. And a couple of my mates looked in the door, and they said, "Hey, you can't be staying here all Christmas night evening." Playing games like this, he said, "Come and have a drink. You want for 10 minutes?" So we went to the local pub and started having a few drinks. You know what it's like at Christmas time. You poured a few down with neck. I believe they said afterwards we had 4 pints to start with, and about 50 whiskies. And they carried us back to the billet, and there was the three of us laid out on the floor in the billet. And of course, I'd ruined the padre's competitions because I had all the answers in my pocket. So I was banned from the club after that.
Really?
I
upset the padre.
I think he forgave me. He was a Christian man.
So what was the padre's job? What did he, I mean, apart from running social evenings?
Well, he ran church services and that sort of thing, you know.
Mm. Was that a big thing in the Fifth Dorset?
Yes, I think they were pretty good. We liked him very much. I did particularly.
Did he have any sort of welfare role? You know, because people come up with problems.
Well, I suppose he did. Yes, I never had any occasion to ask him for any help like that. But I expect he was there, no doubt, for a shoulder to lean on.
Yeah, Because you sound as though you were quite enjoying yourself.
Yes, I was, thoroughly, yeah.
But not everybody did they? And think perhaps they had problems at home or...
Yeah, well, possibly they did, yes. Mm.
Do you remember any people who found things difficult, you know, or had to drop out or...
No, I don't really. When we got to Dover, which was our next station, there was a particularly bad do, because this one of my mates, who was my gunner, and I used to go sort of playing darts and having a few beers, you know, we were well known for it, I suppose. And we had my sergeant, Sergeant Phillips, Paul Phillips, was my banker. And when we used to get a bit skint towards the end of the week, we used to always go to Bob and say, yeah, can you lend us a fiver till payday? And on this particular day, we were in a tented camp just outside of Dover, and there was a Liberty truck going into the town to take the chaps in for an evening in the town. You know, they used to go to the theatre there. And we were skint, so we were looking for Bob Phillips to get some money to go to town. And the truck driver said, well, we're not waiting for you any longer. And off he went with six chaps in the back to town, and we were left stranded back in the camp. And, of course, the truck went into Dover Square, and as it stopped and they were getting out, a shell came over. You know, they used to send the shells over the channel, landed right in amongst the six and killed them all. And so had we found Bob Phillips, we would have been on the floor in Dover Square that night.
So that was a bit of a shock.
It was, yes. Yeah.
Was that the first time the war really sort of affected you?
Well, yes, we were in South Front Barracks in Dover. That was after we left Whitstable. We went down to Dover, and we were in South Front Barracks there. It was an enormous fortress place with great thick walls, you know. And we used to see the flash of Jerry's guns over on the French coast in the night sky. And you count them about 60 a minute. Or thereabouts, it seemed, and the shell would land, you know, over on our side.
Yeah, yeah. So you were actually under fire there. I mean, how safe were you?
Well, we never had any real danger, except these chaps got killed in Dover. But there were quite a lot of damage done in Dover with the shells, you know. Mm.
So what was Dover like? I mean, the South Front Barracks. It was that part that wasn't part of the castle. That was
no, the castle was across from us. Mm. The Hampshires were in the castle at one time, I know.
Yeah, yeah. So how comfortable was South Front Barracks? Was this an old-fashioned barracks?
It was very old. They built in Napoleon's time, so I believe, if I'm right saying. Yeah.
Yeah. How comfortable was that?
Well, it wasn't too bad, I suppose. We took it in our stride, really. Mm. Yeah. I know we used to everlastingly be doing guards there.
Did you? What was it like doing guard there at night?
Well, doing the guard wasn't too bad, but you know, you'd rather go out and on the town. But everybody used to struggle, and I used to get what they used to call a stick. The chap, you'd have an inspection before the guard went on guard, and the guy who was the smartest got what they called the stick job. You'd be the runner for the guard commander, so you didn't have to do your 2 hour stint on guard outside with your rifle, you know. Everybody used to struggle to be smart and get the stick.
So you were quite good at that way.
I was pretty good at it.
Mm. Oh dear. So did you stay in Dover long?
Honestly, I remember I got a job to remember, but we were there quite a while, yeah.
Uh-huh. And where to after that?
Went to Warmer. Mm-hmm. That was a town near Deal. Mm-hmm. And then I believe it's from Warmer that we went to up to near London for the D-Day preparation. No, sorry, we went to Hastings.
Oh, yeah. So this was early, this would be 44. Was it long before D-Day that you went to Hastings?
It was at Hastings that I remember using the flamethrowers mostly, because we used to go on the South Down with them.
And would you have targets, or were there buildings?
No, the whole area of South Down was one tree on it, which one of our brain gun cars crashed into out of all the miles of down.
How did you manage that?
We were out there training, you know, doing the drill with these flamethrowers, and this chap, I won't mention his name, but of all the places in this world, he had to hit the one tree there was for miles.
Right. So when you were using the flamethrowers, what were you practicing flaming, or were you?
Well, only just shooting at anything. Oh, right. Nothing, okay. Really.
Mm.
Mm. Although on one occasion we lived in a hotel down there, so, and I remember we'd partly bring these flamethrowers outside and went in for our lunch, and one guy had to stay there looking after them, of course, because they were secret weapons, I suppose, in those days. Anyway, they were rather dangerous weapons, and he pressed the trigger on one and shot this fluid all up the side of the hotel. But fortunately, he didn't have the ignition switched on. You had to have this thing to ignite it. And had he known there had done that, he'd have set the whole blooming place on fire, you know.
Goodness me, there was a big stink over that.
There was, right, rather a lot of trouble he was in, yeah.
How easy going were the Fifth Dorsets?
Well, I suppose they're pretty easy going, yeah. Mm. We got on very well, the sergeants. There was no very strict discipline, you know, about it.
Mm.
Not once we got sort of acclimatised.
Right. So at Hastings, that's where you started the preparations for D-Day.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So what were they? What sort of preparations did you do?
Well, we no more than our normal training, really, I suppose, because we've been training for it for such a long time, you know.
So how good were you now? What did you feel? You know?
I think we were very efficient. I think I've read in books to say that we're one of the most efficient regiments in the army with our, because we've been training for all this long time, you know.
Yes, yes. Looking back with a bit of hindsight now, did when you were in the field, did you think, oh, I wish they'd told us about that, or oh, it's a shame we couldn't have been told all
no.
That. Yeah.
I don't think we went over.
Got all the training you needed.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, you were trained up to the hilt.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so at Hastings, you were doing final training and so
on.
When did you get an inkling that you'd be going soon?
I think the whole world knew, or all England knew, that the D-Day was pretty well imminent, you know,
and
we're all sort of keyed up for it.
Right. Did anyone say anything? I mean, did you get issued with anything in particular, or?
I don't think we did, not down there. When we got up to near London, I was trying to think of where we went. I got up Tilbury.
Oh, yeah.
We went up to Tilbury. Right. I think they gave us some sort of special type of ration and that we'd use on the boat.
Right.
These sealed tins that heated themselves, you know.
So you left Hastings when, in the night time or during daytime?
No, I don't.
Right, okay. So, and you got to Tilbury, when was this in relation to D-Day?
Well, we sailed on the 19th of June.
Right, okay. So on D-Day you were still in Hastings, were you?
Yes, I think we must have been, because we went straight on up to Tilbury. And
what had you heard about D-Day? Did you get any reports through the
army? Yeah, oh, we were listening minute by minute, if we could, to the people that were reporting it, you know, the reporters over there.
Yeah. Were you sorry that your lot hadn't gone on D-Day?
I don't know, really, about that. There's a mixed feelings, I think, you know.
Mm. What did you all feel about suddenly, you know, going into action? Were you apprehensive?
I suppose we were apprehensive, undoubtedly, yeah.
Mm.
So on one hand you're apprehensive, and on the other you couldn't get in there fast enough, that sort of thing, you know.
Was there anyone who didn't want to go?
I don't remember anybody that really felt that way.
Yeah.
Not that they let us know anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
So you obviously wrote letters to, did you get, I mean, you got enough notice that, you know, D-Day had happened and you'd be going soon, so did you, were you able to write to family and friends and tell them, you know.
I don't know, our letters were censored, so you couldn't say very much that would give anything away, you know.
So you left Hastings and drove your carrier
up to Tilbury, yeah.
What was it like there? Do you remember that journey? Was it daytime or?
No, I don't really remember much about it. I'm sorry to say it.
Yeah. That's right. So you got to Tilbury. Can you remember the scene there? What was going on?
No, I don't know. Well, I think we were camping out, waiting to go onto the docks.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was a Sunday because the dockers said they'd been paid double time and they wanted treble time to work at because it was that they were handling ammunition, and it came to the end of their work shift, and they wanted to down tools and go, and there was quite a bit of consternation about it. But he said, "Here, we're going over on the other side of the water, you know. Let's get on with the job." And they didn't want to do it. I think they had to sort of give them a bribe, sort of thing, extra pay to carry on and do it. We felt a little bit put out about that.
Norman Doerr, end of reel one.